Blog Talk Radio.
From Local Gems Poetry Press, here for Bard's Poetry Revolution. Excited today to bring you the virtual anthology book launch for the White Rose Bards Anthology from Yorkshire, UK. We have a dozen good readers today who are going to be sharing their poetry from the anthology with us. First and foremost, he's actually not from the anthology or from Yorkshire, but he's from Manchester, UK, and he is sort of the Bard's Poetry Coordinator pretty much for the United Kingdom. His name is Yoshiku Chrysafulli, and he wrote the introduction for the book, so he's got a little introduction for us here today, and he's going to read a poem, so let's give it up for Yoshiku.
Hello, everyone. This is Yoshiku Chrysafulli, and at this time when we're kind of disconnected from each other, I think it's important to remember a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of unity. And as I mentioned in the foreword, just because this pain in the backside of a virus has delayed the initial White Rose Bards event doesn't mean that this anthology will go unnoticed. And when we do have the time to get together again, when that's kind of permitted, when all this madness is over, we will get together. But in the meantime, the poetry community needs to kind of realize that there's joy in each other's words, and there's joy in supporting each other, you know, in conversation, in reading each other's words, in reaching out to each other and supporting each other through this trying time. And it's with that in mind that I present this piece for the launch of White Rose Bards. This piece, Pangaea, I wrote it way before COVID was ever a thing, about my own experiences of loneliness, anxiety, and depression. And it's something very poignant for us all right now to just focus on the idea of community and remember that we do have a lot to give and a lot to be, and we can be the best that we can be. All we have to do is just remember. Because just like Pangaea, we will all come together once again. Without further ado, this piece, Pangaea, by myself, Yoshiku Chrysafulli. I balked as I basked in disjointed sunlight, many moons away from an ancient unity. Yet I uprooted tectonic plates, prepared to serve up an omnipresent omelette, for starters, albeit eggs lay anew, unbroken. The indigo angel brings forth love, for amongst the litany of varied experiences, loneliness is a constant companion, whereas true companions scatter like the branches of the tree of knowledge. For I do not yet know the feeling of reassured, regular, and consistent company, merriment a mere anomaly against the sweltering tinges of bleakness. Yet I know it can exist, and that it will. A new reality is hatched from the tears in my mind's eye, fracturing what is, returning to what was, while bringing forth what still can be, reassured and revived by the love we share for one another, where once lay one continent, now lies a community, bound by sacred vows of togetherness. My heart, my home, my Pangaea.
Thank you, Yoshiku, for that wonderful poem and for that wonderful introduction. I think the sentiment is definitely true now more than ever. And thank you for all you do for poetry in the UK. And like you said, when this hard time is past us, there will be live events to celebrate the White Rose Bards Anthology and several other United Kingdom poetry anthologies. But for now, we're here to hear the poets virtually. So next up on the roster is Carol Michael.
What Makes a Poet by Carol Meikle. The words that bubble from our souls, the pauses of reflection, the phrases running in heads like streams that need to find the river, the thinking and waiting and worry about the vacuum. Then a spark of inspiration that comes from where? Hard, hard work, but then we have an everlasting view and vision that inspires the hearer and the reader to take such deep breaths of awe and to remember how we felt when we first saw or read it.
Thank you, Carol. I often wonder what makes a poet myself. Sometimes I wonder if I'm a poet. Next up on the roster is Elizabeth Walker.
Learning to love yourself. It's not an easy thing to do when you've spent your whole life beating yourself black and blue, scolding yourself for not being good enough, believing you'll never be enough to love. You have to believe these were never your thoughts. They were put in your head from all different sorts. People that never knew any better. How could they teach you something they never knew themselves? So now is the time to turn it around. Flip that coin and start living proud. Learn that you're always more than enough. You're special and you'll always be loved. Stand in the mirror every morning you wake. Look at that gorgeous, beautiful face. You won't find this love from anyone else. Not until you wake up and see it for yourself. When you're so used to being told you're not enough, you're always wrong and you're too hard to love. Wipe that stuff right out of your mind. That's not true. It was told to you by the wrong kind. You are the one who puts out your worth. So step up your value. Don't put yourself down. Gather your strength and straighten that crown. Stand in that mirror every morning you wake and tell yourself, I love you. And I'm always proud. You're beautiful and strong and you're not always wrong. You have to see it and believe it for yourself before you can expect it from anyone else. Once you learn to love yourself, you'll never feel needy to hear it from anyone else. You'll stop accepting less than you deserve. You'll raise the bar and realise your own worth. It's so important to love yourself. This inside work cannot be done by anyone else. Once you love and see your own worth, it'll be seen by all who walk on this earth.
I haven't forgotten. You gently grip my hand, but you really don't understand. Never mind, time may not have been kind. But let me go down memory lane and remember once again. Even if you cannot, I have not forgot. Pick up a pear cone and kick up the stones. The days before iPads and mobile phones. Muddy walks with the dog. Swim with him against a sea of mind fog. Your lovely old Ben, the smelly old hound. Underneath the table, he could be found. Passing wind. Yet everyone else thought that Dad had sinned. Knobbly knees, climbing trees. Play once more an off-key chopsticks tune, or croakingly croon Spanish eyes. Looking up to the skies, I'm reminded feathered friends are your foes, although you've always enjoyed having a cat on your lap. Together with ex-street cat Stanley, you'd nap. Scrabble games, forgetting names, custard creams, dozing off to dream of a golfing win, sneakily opening up another tin of clotted cream fudge. Yet you never held a grudge against a hard day's toil. As the kettle would boil, you planted runner beans and grew tomatoes. All sorts grows in the garden tended with care, the freshly ironed shirts you'd wear, well-worked hands gripped wood and steel, provided for every home-cooked meal. Whether down at the dairy or heavy lifting, you'd do what was necessary to get things shifting. From Renault to Peugeot, your cars were pristine. Not a spot was left unclean. Whistling, tickling, playing with me and Mr. Fox, fixing a clock, adjusting the toy koala in the car mirror ahead. You'd enjoy reading Dick Francis crime thrillers in bed. A flutter on the horses, here and there, as you silently sit there. I offer a drink, take a moment to think. As you look past me into yourself, I pick up the photo album on the shelf. Cork Castle in the sunshine, a train journey across Dorset coastline. You went to Leeds and met football heroes. Those were some days to be remembered always. Putting together puzzles bit by bit, you would sit, browsing the newspaper, tearing off folded football coupons for later. Muddled mistakes? Never mind. Have a cake. Crosswords proved frustrating. Better not keep Grandma waiting. Always late, but your company was great. Cutting over the Daily Mail, madcap family days out to Moore's Valley Rail. Competitive card games over a shandy. If it's Christmas, you'd be persuaded for brandy. Pudding was never to be sipped. Over the road you nipped for a paper to see what's on telly tonight. As that light in your head now appears to go out, I have no doubt somewhere these memories are floating around, waiting to be found. Yet they are not lost to me, so I'll let you be. In our hearts and in our minds, you are still here. For you, I will keep the thoughts, sights, sounds, magical moments and memories near.
Thank you for that wonderful poem. There was a technical glitch before, which is why I didn't introduce the name of that poet, but that was Georgiana Petty, and that poem was a tribute to her late grandfather. So thank you for that, Georgiana. Next up, we have Hannah Smith.
Little birds, featherless on my knee. You always said it was a parent's role to protect their children, to hold their hands across the road, keep them back from the cliff. The view was the kind you couldn't miss. As I grew, you watched me pick my path, saw me falter at the fork between risk and reward. You swallowed silence like a blade when I strode that unfamiliar road. Still, you waited, saw my wings silhouette the sun, waved me on, goodbye. Confident I could fly on my own until winter brought me home, my little birds featherless on my knee. It's our job to protect, you say, and I nod, feeling the fear you felt that day when I ran towards the edge, when I gripped the sky. It wasn't until I was out of view, when you could no longer fight for me, that I fell from flight. And now that I feel the point of the blade I'd wield to shield my own, now I know your fear, tell you how I fell, hear how you had to swallow your wingless words, carved hollow by the violence. in their vacuum, no room for sword or silence.
Thank you, Hannah. Moving right along, we're going to Ian Whiteley.
The Cycle of the Scarecrow. A scarecrow in autumnal sheen thinks of all that he has been. His age-old frame begins to lean as bitter winds blow in so keen. He longs for days of evergreen, so buys back time, wipes the slate clean, gives his soul to the pumpkin queen, the witch who walks at Halloween. The scarecrow dreams of living free. He thinks he's gonna survive. The summer sun, the winter snow, he's never felt so alive. The scarecrow dreams of living free. He thinks he's gonna survive. The springtime thaw, the autumn leaves, he's never felt so alive. A scarecrow in the wax moonlight is snowed upon one winter's night. And as the crystal's softer light, he dreams perhaps some day he might take footsteps off into the bright ice world, his skeletal delight, some hours later, fat and white, with snow flesh waiting for coal sight. The scarecrow dreams of leaving home. He thinks he's going to survive. The summer sun, the winter snow, he's never felt so alive. The scarecrow dreams of leaving home. He thinks he's going to survive. The springtime thaw, the autumn leaves, he's never felt so alive. A scarecrow in a cutting rain watches his slush slide down the drain, and as it leaves he feels the pain as bones of wood protrude and drain. Weak sunlight sows the sleeping grain as he is called upon again to stand guard over crops, attain dominance over winter's stain. The scarecrow dreams of working hard. He thinks he's going to survive. The summer sun, the winter snow, he's never felt so alive. The scarecrow dreams of working hard. He thinks he's going to survive. The springtime thaw, the autumn leaves, he's never felt so alive. A scarecrow dries in summer sun, knowing that once more he's won the right of those which he has won to face the crows of Albion. Then as the solstice webs are spun and shadows lengthen, day is done, he knows that he cannot outrun what autumn's beetles have begun. The scarecrow dreams of dying now, he's not so sure he'll survive. The summer sun, the winter snow, he's never felt less alive. The scarecrow dreams of dying now, he's not so sure he'll survive. The springtime thaw, the autumn leaves, he's never felt less alive. A scarecrow in autumnal sheen thinks of all that he has been. His age-old frame begins to lean as bitter winds blow in so keen. He longs for days of evergreen, so buys back time, wipes the slate clean, gives his soul to the pumpkin queen, the witch who walks at Halloween.
Thank you for that, Ian. Especially with the fall hitting now, we're going to be getting into the Halloween season soon, so I really appreciate that. I always love when you get the first, fall cool air in there. And for those listening right now, I want to say that we have a surprise guest. I wasn't sure he was going to be here, but he's here today. Give it up for fellow Local Gems Press publisher, Nick Hale. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how are you doing? Yeah, I wasn't sure I was going to be here either with the amount of traffic, but I made it. And I'm glad I made it on that poem because it's very appropriate. The weather's just starting to turn around here, and fall is on its way, so it's very seasonal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've had a lot of good, powerful poems from Yorkshire, UK so far. We have several more to go, so give it up on the lineup next. We have James Flynn.
Infant Hercules that built the world, fitfully sleeping, body furled. The time is nigh to give him a nudge, make him aware of the need to budge. Alert him to the peril within, tell him a fight back must begin. Founding fathers, Balco and Vaughan, silently gaze on their protege, forlorn. Powerless to ease his sickly demise, watching him fade before their eyes, inwardly churning with dismay, seeing his industrial lifeblood seep away. Dormant hustler, Sadler Bell, unable to quell the infant's death knell. Bridge and shipbuilding long gone, mighty steel hanging on. ICI long decamped, parcelled up, sold off, revamped. Employment levels downward ramped. China sneezes, Hercules wheezes. Red car steel production freezes. Government non-intervention appalling. Steely in resisting, soft mothballing. Cabinet displaying metal fatigue. Chancellor obsessed with Chinese intrigue. Coke ovens cooling, inwardly crumbling. Blast furnace survival hopes tumbling. Liquidator signalling an asset grab. Steel destined for the mortuary slab. Ships anchored off wreck car shore, laden with lifeblood of coal and ore. Residents of Teesside rise as one, lay siege to Parliament until the culprits are gone. Save the infant from the final rites, confront the Chancellor and his acolytes.
Thank you, James. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of this broadcast, and shame on me, considering this is a UK anthology, but today is Roald Dahl Day.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, well, it is. So for everybody who's, you know, enjoyed the Roald Dahl books over the years, I know I sure have, you know, just happy Roald Dahl Day out there.
Yeah, his short stories were excellent, too. I wouldn't share them with your kids, but most of them were very good.
Yeah, depends on the kid, I would say.
And the story, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, moving along, next up we have Lucy Pettigrew.
It's 3 a.m. and we are stumbling through the snowy streets of York, shuffling down snicker ways and somehow ending up back where we started. We stop at the Burger Van for food to eat on the way home and the HSBC cash machine for just-in-case money, letting the festivity emitting from the lights envelope us. The Christmas tree next to the M&S that we spent too many times sheltering from the rain in looks too big for our drunk minds to comprehend, so we bypass it in a flurry of laughter and too many vodka lemonades. Letting the feeling of our warm flat guide us home, we find our way out of the maze of streets and walk along the river because the main gate is locked at 11 p.m. sharp every night. The flakes of snow start to make a home on our eyelashes and on our clothes that are definitely not keeping us warm enough in this minus degree weather. We stop again and again and again to belly laugh at throwaway jokes we won't remember tomorrow daytime, and despite our physically freezing bodies, we start to feel warm in the glow of each other. And after all that, when I'm safely tucked up in bed and thawing, instead of feeling tired, I feel awake, and I can't wait to go out in the morning and do it all over again.
Thank you, Lucy. Next up on the lineup, we have Maria Liotta.
Back to Life, a poem for Richard III. I can hear the clash of swords and halberds. I see him. He will be mine. I go straight towards my target. I need to do it for my people, my kingdom, my crown. Nothing is lost yet. My horse runs, the drum in my chest beats fast, my breath warms my face under the helmet. This is my moment. The noise of the battle is roaring for me. My knights are ready. The white boar will win again. Suddenly my horse stops. I fall down. I need to fight on my feet. Soldiers are waiting for me in the storm of the battle. They look at me, I look in their eyes, but hatred and rage burn in them. I can see the fire of treachery. Alone, I feel alone. The clash of swords and halberds is against me now. I fight with all my strength against my assailants. Something enters my body. I feel the acute pain of metal inside my flesh.
I'm falling. My helmet is lost. Nothing can save me now. All is lost. The white rose is losing her petals. Something warm and red is covering my face. I can taste blood in my mouth. The white ball can't win anymore. Betrayal is murdering him. My crown is lost. My kingdom is lost. Life is abandoning me. Treason. Oh, Lord, save my soul. Silence and darkness. The noise of the battle is distant now. I can't hear it anymore. I see my naked body viciously mistreated. But I don't feel pain, not the blood in my mouth. Just the bitterness of disloyalty. Time goes by. Years, decades, centuries. But I'm not ready to be found. Slanders and hate are my name. I am a monster now. The most maligned monarch ever. Richard the murderer, the unchecked king. I lay here in the dark. I can hear the monk's choir, the horse's hoofs, the carriage's wheels, the roar of iron lions upon me, but I'm not ready yet. Finally, my day arises. It is the same day I was hidden from the world, the day they stopped looking at my abused body and put an unnamed gravestone on what remained of me. Today I will rise again. I have chosen the rescuer who will bring me back to life. No clash of swords and halberds, just the mercy of all those who love me, who trust me, who still fight on my side. The ones I chose for my rebirth, the white rose of the boar, will blossom once again for them.
Thank you, Maria.
I really liked the poem. I'd love to see that on the page so I could take my time reading it, which means I guess I need to get a copy of the book. But I think the reading itself also really enhanced it.
Yeah, definitely. I know, and this is an anthology. This is kind of like the reverse. You're hearing the poems before you're actually reading them.
Yeah. It's a nice change, though.
Yes, which is backwards from what you always say. It's like, I always read the poems and see them one way, but then when I hear them, it's different. So this is like, you know, opposite day. Next up, Siobhan Gifford.
Mother is a verb. Buffeted by a shrill westerly on a Heathcliff moor, bearings lost in compost of fog, deep bog underfoot, dense cloud swirls blot the sooty mire, ghostly views behind darkened hues. A grouse croaks at my anxious feet, sour fear oozes from deadened peat. Where is he now, my like-wake walker? My son adrift on rank marshland. Just dim shapes of house and tumuli for pie in the sky navigation on a Yorkshire ocean of deep dank moss. Has he passed Ravenstones, blue man in the moss, or is he lost on the tops at Shunner Howe? Has he reached Fat Betty, limestone boulder, eyeless face on stony shoulder? A coin on her head wards off dread quagmire sprites. On steepled bluff, the stench of fright. Dirges cross from east to west, on coffin trails that flail sumps and dales. I scour the fog for my boy, his dog. Phantom thoughts opaque the slough, spectre worries in moorland rough. Then cloud lifts the hem of its soggy blanket, for a signpost of sun on a far-flung thicket, and there at last, 3 hours past deadline, the grouse and I spot a hound ahead, our quarry Lazarusing from imagined dead.
Thank you, Simone. Well, lots of, definitely have a good collection of good poems and good readings here today. So, really excited for the day when there can be, a live launch for this anthology. Like Yoshiku says, that'll be happening when, things clear up a little bit and when, gatherings are permitted again in the UK.
Yeah, I enjoyed the rhyme in that one particularly, and the use of the word Lazarusing. I don't think I've ever heard Lazarus use it before.
No, but
you
get what it means.
It says a lot in one word. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It says a lot in one word. I like poems that do that. And I think that one would also be a great one to hear live. So,
yeah.
Here's hoping that can come soon.
Definitely. So we've got two readers left on the lineup. The second to last one is Richard Jenkins.
Who is That 1 AM Ghost by Richard Jenkins, recited by Richard Jenkins. Everyone is working off their debt, and I'm still craving my bed. No, I don't suppose it means much to you. Who stole the pitch, put out the fire with a fiend of itch? Who took out the glimmer, forced and plunged in the dimmer switch into my sunbeam? I know, it wasn't me or you. How to keep the fight and glee and remove the raging part of my coppery heart. No, it wasn't you or me. And yet, here is the sorrow, the metallic taste I could never stomach or swallow. Fine, I'll shut up. I've sold my stories for a cheap imitation of what used to be my most prized possession. No more colors left to lease to imagination. Yes, I see your eyes turn to myopic flood, discolored now by apathy's blood. My stories reek of an infection. I was once able to resist its detention, dance away from, now stumble, trip, far from the starlit kiss of hips.
Thank you, Richard. I really like that last line. So, the last but not least, the final reader for the day is Saida Medhi.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. This poem of mine is called Snow Angel, and here it is. A silent whisper, a single maple leaf, blows across the threshold. The drying roses stand ajar, slightly apart, in the transparent ways. Your footsteps are still visible on the dust-coated, cascading staircase. My life, a sand particle in an hourglass falling through. Trapped in a snow globe, snowflakes in my hair, twirling in a red dress. Still waiting for you. Thank you.
No, thank you for that nice visual poem.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. It was great imagery.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really enjoyed all the readings we had today. I mean, and it's, it feels like we just started and, now we're through all dozen readers. So, it's amazing how that happens both when you're having fun and when it's a virtual reading and you don't have to go through the people, getting up to walk to the mic and then walk back down and then walk to the mic. You kind of save about, a half hour to an hour just on that, depending on how many readers you have.
Yeah, it's surprising how long that can take sometimes.
Yeah.
And it saves your hands with all the clapping,
That too. Oh, yeah, by the end of a good reading, your hands hurt. You need to start wearing, protective poetry reading gloves or something. So thank you for all the readers who submitted their poetry recordings for our White Rose Barge Yorkshire Poetry Virtual Book Launch here on Roald Dahl Day. Like we said a couple times, when things lift, there will hopefully be a real-life gathering for this anthology. There's also a couple of other anthologies coming up through the Bards in the UK. You know, they'll be having the second year of the Buzzin' Bards Manchester, run by Yoshiko Crisafulli. And then there's going to be the Oxford-inspired Bards, which will hopefully be coming out before the end of the year. So thank you, everybody, for being a part of this. Thank you, Nick, for joining me for the second half. Thank you to Yoshiko Crisafulli for being the Bards Poetry Organizer in the UK. Thank you to everybody who listens to Bards Poetry Revolution. We've been having a huge spike in listenership lately. I guess people have really been enjoying having these poetry readings to listen to. So hopefully we'll have more for you soon. Take care. And for those who write, keep on writing.
Bye, everybody.